Revenue for April 10th, 2007 will come to order. We have two items on our agenda today, House Bill for public hearing, House Bill 2398 and House Bill 3023. We're going to open a public hearing on both of these bills. Chris.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Both bills increase the earned income credit. House Bill 2398 gradually increases the credit from the current 6% to 12%, and it does so by increasing the percentage point by one percentage point each year from 2007 through 2012 until it reaches 12%, and then it stays at 12% permanently, and the bill also makes the credit permanently refundable. House Bill 3023 simply makes the earned income credit 12% of the federal credit starting with tax year 2008 and also makes the credit permanently refundable. You also have in front of you on the draft revenue impacts for that for 2398. The phase-in is about $16 million in 07-09 and $25 million in 09-11. And House Bill 3023, the revenue impact is $25 million in 07-09 and $43 million in 09-11. Just want to point out also, by way of background information, you have in front of you a table that identifies the states with earned income credit. It shows the other 25 states or so that have a state earned income credit and the rate and whether it's refundable or not. And you also have a research report produced by Legislative Revenue from December 2004 that provides some more detailed information on the earned income credit and Oregon's Working Family Child Care Tax Credit.
Thank you very much. And I see we have Representative Comp with us. Representative.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. It's my pleasure to bring, for the record, I'm Representative Betty Comp, and I represent House District 22, which is Woodburn, Jervis, and North Salem. And during the interim, I was approached by people that work hard to make sure that everybody can make ends meet in this state. And my district, House District 22, has a very high level of poverty, and this bill would mean a lot to some of my constituents. And so with that, you have the history in front of you, and being a member on revenue last time, please don't give me a test over all this, Representative Butler, because I'm not going to remember all of it. But it's my pleasure today to introduce Kevin Feeney, and he's here from the Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, and he's going to share his perspective and his organization's why this is a very, very valuable piece of legislation. And with that, Chair Barnhart, if you so please, I'm going to go back and chair my subcommittee, if that's all right.
Absolutely. Are there questions for Representative Comp? Thank you.
Thank you, because the staff did a great job of introducing it, and it's very clear and straightforward.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Mr. Kevin.
They're a good crowd.
Okay. Usually. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Kevin Finney, Public Policy Director with Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon is a statewide association of Christian denominations and numerous congregations, social ministries, and interreligious organizations working together to respond to the need of all Oregonians. The federal earned income tax credit was first enacted in 1975 under the Ford administration, was championed and expanded by President Ronald Reagan, and has been further expanded since. Oregon enacted a state earned income tax credit in 1997. Oregon taxpayers who qualified for the federal credit were allowed a credit on their state income taxes equal to 5% of the dollar value of the federal credit. In 2005, the legislature increased the state earned income tax credit to 6% of the federal credit beginning in 2008 and made it a refundable tax credit, though that provision sunsets in 2011. Today we ask you to do two things. First, we ask you to expand the value of the Oregon Earned Income Tax Credit from 6% to 12%. Expanding the value of the state EITC will put cash in the pockets of low-income working families and will mean that most working families below the poverty level will no longer be required to pay state income taxes. Second, we ask that you make the credit permanently refundable. Both bills before you would accomplish these two goals, and Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon supports both bills. We want to thank Representative Comp and Representative Rosenbaum for their leadership on this issue, and we thank Chair Barnhart and the members of the committee for holding this hearing. We believe that expanding the value of the refundable earned income tax credit is one of the most important things you can do to alleviate poverty in Oregon. According to the U.S. Census, there are roughly 460,000 people at or below the poverty level in Oregon. Approximately 17.3% of children in this state live in poverty. A key element of any poverty reduction program is increased workforce participation. The earned income tax credit is uniquely structured to increase workforce participation through making work pay. This is because the credit is structured with a phase-in range, a plateau range, and a phase-out range. I won't trouble you with the details of those, but they're here in the testimony. The earned income tax credit is also deliberately structured to concentrate most of its benefits on working families, and thus is especially helpful in reducing childhood poverty. Remember that the level of poverty among children in Oregon is 34% higher than among adults. For those filing without dependents, the maximum value of the federal earned income tax credit is less than $500, and thus the maximum value of the state credit is currently less than $25. This is why making the credit permanently refundable is so important. Refundability is most helpful to those working families who are really struggling to make work work. It most helps the poorest of poor working families. These might be individuals who've only been able to get part-time work, or who, through no fault of their own, have found themselves laid off for part of a year. Finally, expanding the value of the state earned income tax credit is not only good policy, it is also both achievable and smart politics. By putting income back into the pockets of working families, it boosts local economies and thus benefits not only the recipients of the credit, but also their landlord, their grocer, and other local merchants. On average, each house district in Oregon has some 3,663 tax filers who claim the federal earned income tax credit and thus are entitled to the state credit. We urge you to act this session to expand the value of the state EIC and to make this credit permanently refundable. We ask for your thoughtful consideration and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you, sir. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
We have the bills right now.
We're open on both.
I testify.
Yes, you may. Representative Rosenbaum.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am, for the record, Representative Diane Rosenbaum from House District 42, Southeast and Northeast Portland, and I am testifying today in support of House Bill 3023. I think you are all probably aware that Oregon places a high tax burden on low-income families, and particularly low-income working families, and we don't have a lot of tools that we can use to do something to offset that, but definitely things like the earned income tax credit are one of the tools that we can use to make life a little bit easier on folks that are working hard every day just to get by and not having enough left over in their pay envelope at the end of the month to pay the bills, let alone to do anything like, you know, go out to eat or have a little fun occasionally. They are struggling just to be able to pay the rent, the heat, occasionally buy shoes, possibly not Nikes, for their kids. And so that is really what we're dealing with in the bills that you're hearing today. I think that this is really one of the most important pieces of legislation that we'll be considering in this committee. According to U.S. Census data, the earned income tax credit has lifted more children out of poverty than any other government program. In this building, we're used to getting peppered with well-crafted talking points every day, but I think that this sentence alone is pretty profound. So I'll say it again. The earned income tax credit has lifted more children out of poverty than any other single government program. The EITC is about as simple and straightforward as any tax policy can be. It's both a state and a federal tax credit that benefits the working poor. In other words, you have to have income, which means you have to work in order to get the benefit of it. House Bill 3023 expands the scope of the EITC for many Oregon families, and it offers a refund for those whose tax credit exceeds their total taxes owed. Increasing the earned income tax credit to 12% from its current 5%, which is the main provision of House Bill 3023, will eliminate state income taxes for most families with one or more children living in poverty. Oregon tax law is written with an express statutory goal of shielding genuine subsistence income from taxation. And the best way to actually do that is to reduce the tax burden on the working poor in our state. I think to pass this bill and make the benefits of the EITC permanent will provide a real leg up to the poorest Oregonians. That alone would be enough of a reason to pass the bill out of here, but it provides other benefits as well. For the 2004 tax year, this tax credit returned more than $359 million to our state, and that money will flow back into our local economies because we know that every dime these folks are getting is being spent in their communities. Obviously, this is money that will stimulate those local economies. So the bill makes a few small and simple changes to existing tax law, but the good it will do, I think, will probably outlast many of us, at least our service in this building. And so I would urge you to take a good look at this bill and hopefully to give it a favorable recommendation. I also want to mention that I have worked with the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force on this bill. They are fully in support of it. I think you will probably be hearing from them shortly. But they also worked with members of the same committee. Many of you were on it last session, where a modest change was made, and this would carry on, I think, the very good work that was started in a bipartisan way. I think that Representative Bruin may have been very involved in that, as well as Representative Haas, who was here at the time. So it would be a great thing if we could amplify that. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Representative Rosenbaum?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
And I may.
Representative Rosenbaum
may be able to answer this. If not, maybe Chris can. Maybe it's a staff question. And the question is simply this. Do we have any idea, and when you were working with Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force, maybe some of these came up in conversation, do we know how many families in Oregon right now that are working families that would qualify under the current system and maybe even this expanded system are not utilizing it, or aren't educate on it or aware of it to actually use it? And maybe that's better for.
I think that there may
be. Is that coming up later, maybe?
In the audience.
Okay, that's all. I'll wait.
That better than I could. I mean, clearly there are a lot of people eligible for these credits that are not taking advantage of
that. Yeah, yeah. Still, okay, thank you.
But thank now you. We're aware of the question.
Right.
That's
right.
Helpful. Thank you. Mike Leachman.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify on these two important bills today. The earned income credit, as we've heard, is...
And for the record.
For the record, my name is Mike Leachman. I'm a policy analyst with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. The earned income credit is crucial to a lot of our low-income working families. It encourages work. It helps families reach and sustain self-sufficiency. I and other advocates for low-income working families appreciate the legislature's support of the state earned income credit in the past. It's particularly important today as the poverty rate among working families with children has really been increasing. In fact, over the last generation, the poverty rate among working families with children in Oregon has more than doubled. Among full-time working families with children in Oregon, these are families that are working full-time year-round, in the 1979-81 period, just 2.7% of them were poor, despite their work effort. And as of the latest data in 2004 and 2005, that figure was 6.5%. I've shared with you a couple of recent papers that we put out. One just came out today. The first is a longer paper we released last week that just provides some background about both the federal and state earned income credits. I hope will be useful to you. One of the points that we make is just to stress how important the federal earned income credit is, and by extension also the state earned income credit in community economies in every legislative house district. As Representative Rosenbaum mentioned, in 2004, the federal credit alone brought in $359 million statewide, and an average of $6 million into each legislative house district. Now, at the federal level, poor families with children generally don't pay federal income taxes. And in most states now, that's true, too. Most poor families don't pay state income taxes. Oregon's one of a minority of states that are still taxing poor families with children who are living in poverty. In 2006, a family of four who was living at the poverty line in Oregon, that's $20,615, paid income taxes of state income taxes of $319. That's the fifth highest level of any state in the country. The most direct way to eliminate state income taxes on families in poverty is to expand the earned income credit, and as Representative Rosenbaum said, expanding it to 12% of the federal credit would do the trick. It would eliminate state income taxes on most families with one or two children who live in poverty in Oregon. And both House Bill 3023 and House Bill 2398 would expand the credit to 12%. As you've heard, House Bill 2398 would phase in the increase, and House Bill 3023 would make it happen in tax year 2008. This not only would expand our it would mean that Oregon would join the majority of states who no longer tax poor families deeper into poverty. It also would, as I think Representative Rosenbaum also mentioned, help us meet our statutory goal that our tax system be based both on the ability to pay and that it shield genuine subsistence income from taxation. Now, advocates asked us at OCPP to propose a possible revenue source, and so the other piece that I've shared with you today proposes one possible revenue source to pay for the increase to 12%. And the proposal we make is to phase out the personal exemption credit for high-income Oregonians, those with adjusted gross incomes of $200,000 or more. That's in 2005 the highest income 2.4% of Oregon taxpayers. So the proposal would leave untouched the vast majority of Oregon taxpayers, but would phase out the personal exemption credit for that most high-income group. The average adjusted gross income of that group in 2005 was more than $517,000, and over the last generation, since 1980, the top 2.4% of households have seen their adjusted gross incomes really skyrocket, nearly come close to tripling from about $188,000 after adjusting for inflation to, as I mentioned, $517,000 or so today. That compares to a income growth for the bottom fifth that's up very slightly, but nearly flat over the same time period. So it would serve the purpose of helping us confront the widening income inequality over the last generation, also because state and local taxes have declined as a share of income for the richest taxpayers in Oregon and gone up for the poorest fifth, at least over the 1989 to 2002 period, which is the period that we have data on this for. It would help us to counteract that trend as well. So, in closing, just want to encourage you to take a good look at these two proposals. Eliminating income taxes on poor families, not pushing them deeper into poverty, and assuring that we make work pay are important goals. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Leibson. There are two items that I wanted to get correct from my records. One, and then a question I have on another. You indicated that something about the working families in poverty has doubled over the past number of years in Oregon. What was that statistic again?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, the statistic was that since from the 1979 to 81 period, when the poverty rate among working families with children, so this is full-time, year-round working families with children in Oregon, the poverty rate among that group in 79-81 was 2.7%. As of the latest data...
Percent of what?
So it's...
2.7% of what?
Of all working families with... of all full-time working families with children.
With children. So
yes.
Using the same numerator and denominator.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And as of the latest data, that same figure for 2004-2005 was 6.5%. So it's easily more than...
What was the date on that? Sorry.
2004-2005.
Okay.
Was
6.5%.
And you're calculating this the same way?
Yes, I am.
In both cases,
I'm using, as a denominator, all full-time working... full-time working families with children... And the numerator is those that of that group who are poor despite their work effort.
So, Mr. Chair, the clarifying question I had with regard to that statistic was: do we have any idea what's happened in Oregon to have, or is this an anomaly only to Oregon, or in other states is it 10% and Oregon is it 6.5%? So we're doing a great job. Can you help me with that, please?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, Oregon is not unique in this way. I don't have any specific data to share with you on that question, but I could get that and be happy to share that with the committee later. In general, though, the point is that Oregon is not particularly unique in this way.
And then a follow-up question, if I may, on another item. Reading from your, this comes from your April 4th report, and it's on the second page, on the second full paragraph, Mr. Leachman, the last sentence of that, it says, in 2004-2005, there was a 66,100 able-bodied poor families with children in Oregon, and 74% of these families worked at least part of the prior year. Does that then mean that 26% of able-bodied families with children had no contacts with the job market?
Chairman Barnhart, Representative Butler, that means that that the 26% who don't show up in that statistic did not have earnings from work in that year. So those families are maybe seeking work. They may not. Prior to the recession, when the economy was growing rapidly in the late 1990s, that rate was significantly higher. So you see it shifting quite a bit with the economy. I don't have the figure off the top of my head, but it was well over 80% at before the downturn hit in the 99-2000 period.
So, Mr. Chair, just I guess parenthetically then, if 26% of Oregon's able-bodied families, poor families with children, had no contact with the labor market in times when we were running at double-digit unemployment, maybe we've got to do a little more outreach with regard to our Department of Employment, too, because we had a lot of unemployment, but a lot of people who should have been looking for work had some, had the jobs not been available. So I'm anxious to, at some point, to reconcile Oregon's high unemployment and the fact that we've got able-bodied, ready to go to work, willing people with children, 26% of them having no contact whatsoever with the employment market. Thank you.
And it's interesting that three-quarters of the people did. We're in fact employed at least part-time during that period, if your statistic is to be understood the way I understand it.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler. I think, you know, we shouldn't make too much of that statistic. The able-bodied identification simply means that that both adults or all adults in the household were not disabled. We don't know very much about the employability of those of those families simply from that statistic.
Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Leachman? I have I sent a couple, if I can get back to them. It's not clear to me, on the second page of your issue brief of today, that figure 2 shows the income of the richest 2.4%. Why did you pick 2.4%? Is that the people above 200,000 of income?
Or Chair Barnhart, that's correct. I chose that right, because in 2005, the latest data that I had, the group that had adjusted gross incomes over 200,000.
And it says that in the text up above. I just simply missed it. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. This is an interesting idea.
Thank you.
Now, I've got several other witnesses want to be heard today, so let's just move precipitously along. And some of these, I'm sorry, I have trouble reading the handwriting. The first one is Patty
Whitney Wise.
Patty Whitney Wise. Thank you. I should have been able to translate that. And and Jim, is it
Harper?
Well, that should be easy, too. Would you come forward, please?
Chair, can I write on that? Please print.
Please. It does say that on here. Please print legibly. But and you have to be especially legible for the chair, who has trouble reading signatures.
My staff fully concur. For the record, I'm Patty Whitney Wise, the director for the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force, and I really want to thank you for hearing these bills today. You've heard some very good testimony already about the need for increasing the refundable earned income tax credit here in Oregon, the fact that it would that it's one of the best ways to help families move out of poverty. One statistic that hasn't been used yet today relating to where we're looking at potential funding sources. If you look at the overall tax burden for the highest fifth of income earners in Oregon, it's at about a little over 6%. If you look at it for the bottom fifth, they're paying about 9% of their income. So there is an inequality in terms of percent of income that goes into both state and local taxes. So in a way, what this does by coupling the earned income tax credit with a reduction in the personal exemption at the top level, it helps make our system more progressive and more fair for those families working full-time at the bottom of the income scale. And I think that's very important. And I want to mention one other thing. Obviously, ideally, we would be looking for these dollars out of the general fund. We're very aware, however, that we've been through quite a recession and that there are many needs in this state, including the Oregon Health Plan and others, that were cut back significantly during the recession that need restoration. And so we did pledge with our other partners that we would look for another funding source because we knew there was a lot of pressure on the general fund, and we wanted in good faith to bring that to you. And I might add that the funding source that Oregon Center for Public Policy brought forward to you is an item that is in our Act to End Hunger that we released almost 3 years ago. And if I may read it to you, number 10, reconfigure the personal exemption credit, making it higher for low-income families and phasing it out for well-off families to ensure that poor families pay a lower overall tax rate than higher-income families. Essentially, what we're talking about with the refundable earned income tax credit and phasing out of the personal exemption exactly meets the intent of that item in the Act to End Hunger. So it's a very natural piece for us to be supportive of since we had proposed this 3 years ago. I would like to just end by saying that we believe very strongly that hardworking families should be able to afford their housing, food, and other basic necessities when they work full-time. That just seems like a fair thing to expect. And secondly, we've worked very hard over the last few years with the Act End Hunger and other measures to lower our hunger rate. As you know, we were number one in the country for a number of years. We're now down to number 22. That's great. We still have a long way to go. And this measure would help us reach that. It would help more families have the money they need to put food on their table while they're working hard to move up and out of poverty and be regular contributing members of our society. So we encourage you to support this wholeheartedly. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, my name is Jim Harper, Executive Director for Cache Oregon, located in Portland, Oregon, and working with the Tri-County area, Clackamas, Washington, and Multnomah County. For the last 3 or 4 years, there's been an Oregon Tax Coalition in the Tri-County area in which a group of nonprofits, public sector, some private sector organizations would get together on a monthly basis at United Way and talk about how do we get the message out to the low-income working families to take advantage of the earned income tax credit. A year and a half ago, 2 years ago, Social Venture Partners, which is a philanthropic group in Portland, and United Way decided that they would form an organization and get some more infrastructure put together to address that issue, that's what they did. So that's how Cache Oregon came to be. This is our second tax season. We really have three objectives. One is to communicate to people who are eligible for the income tax credit. The second one is then to have enough tax sites, free tax aid sites, to serve that population so once they found out about it that they could come in and get their taxes prepared to help them. And the third is the financial literacy part of it, working with them on the financial education. I can tell you from a question I heard earlier, it's estimated that 15 to 20% of the people who are eligible for earned income tax credits in the state of Oregon don't receive it. They don't apply for it. They don't file their taxes. Or if they do, they're afraid to fill it out. And that's from coming from the Internal Revenue Service's estimates of what's there. I can also tell you that approximately $33 million went unclaimed in the state of Oregon in 2006, again, estimate. And I can speak to you again from another point of view today, is that I took the training to be a tax preparer and have done that for the last 2 years. In fact, we'll finish on the 17th and have worked in four different sites preparing taxes for low-income working families. And it's probably the most rewarding thing you can see when a family will come in and receive the $3,000 or the $2,000. The average now is $1,600 for people who are eligible for that and what that means to them based on the level of income they have and what that can do. We've had examples of people buying homes with the money they receive back, buying shoes, buying groceries, paying bills. So it's just, to me, as a person who can go out there and work with families and see the impact that it has on those families is tremendous. And also, there is a dedicated group of people. We work with three of the community action agencies. We partner with lots of different nonprofit organizations to get the word out and help these folks. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask a couple of questions of Patty. Patty Whitney Wise is my go-to person on all these matters. So if I could. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Patty, the increase in income tax on folks over 200,000.
Correct.
Is there a House bill that does that somewhere? Really, we ought to be hearing at the same time we're hearing this.
There is none at the moment. We're hoping that maybe one of you would take it up.
Okay. It's not out there. Okay. Follow-up question,
yes,
if I may.
Please.
Thank you. And I promise to be really good after this, because I do have some questions. Patty, what do we do for the senior citizens who are on fixed incomes that may make less than those working families that have a lot of medical bills and some other kinds of things, but still end up paying some income taxes? Because this phases out in Oregon's very fast progressing income tax picture that we've got. Any kind of an idea of what we can do to assist the seniors? I appreciate the families, the young working families with young children. What kind of a credit, any idea there that we might be able to afford those seniors?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, you did bring this up with me when I met with you as well, and I've been racking my brain. I do know that there is a renter's credit available, and there are some special credits available for seniors who are over 65 years of age, but I do realize that there may be more that could be done. I might suggest that if we could get the bill phasing out the personal exemption at the top end, that there would be enough revenue there to also address those on fixed incomes, and perhaps that could be coupled with a piece like that. I'd be very open to any suggestions that you might have. Seniors are the one area that we are not as familiar with. We're beginning to work in that arena. We've got a pilot project we're working on with the Department of Human Services to do special outreach to seniors to encourage them to apply for food stamps, and coupled with that, we're working at the federal level to get the minimum benefit raised from $10 to at least $25 in the Farm Bill reauthorization that's happening this year. But I would be very open to creative thinking on that, since that's not an area of expertise for the task force. We're just beginning to move into looking at. And the main reason is that there are far fewer seniors than there are children who are in poverty and who are food insecure. And so that's why we focus more at the other end, but it does not mean that we aren't concerned and would be very willing to look more closely. And I'd be happy to work with you on that.
And Mr. Chair, I really appreciate that. I guess my concern is that children will cry when they're hungry. Seniors just go to bed. And that's sometimes a very difficult thing to get our arms around. Finally, the two last items, and as I mentioned, Mr. Chair, I promise to be good. Patty, one of the things that we're doing or trying to do in the revenue committees in the Senate and the House is to put performance measurements on how we're doing and to kind of measure the good things that we can do when we pass these kinds of credits. And that's another reason why we sunset these kinds of things as well. Can you help us with measurement, performance measurements and those kinds of things, and then figure out how we can reach in and have the progress board help us to measure, are we doing a better job? I know that there's a way of determining how many people are going to hungry bed at night and those kinds of things. And you don't have to respond to that now, but I would like to have for you to rub some gray matter on that.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. And again, Mr. Chair, with regard to Mr. Harper, when I grow up, I hope I can do what he's doing, and that is to help people in the inner city and other places to just sit down at a card table at a Walmart or something and just say, hey, tax returns done free.
Thank you.
He's going to take your name, Matt.
Here, I'll give you my card.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for your presentation. I'm wondering, if we look beyond the earned income tax credit, I'm thinking about many of the hearings that we've had here so far, and we've talked about tax credits for business owners, tax credits for seniors, for a variety of things, tax credits for veterans. What other kinds of help are we giving to working poor families? Is this the only thing that we do, or are there other options for them?
Chair Barnhart and Representative Gelser, there are a number of things that actually are going through this session, part of which you're participating in. One is the temporary assistance for needy families, which helps those families who are not working prepare for and get back into the workforce. And that program provides a monthly benefit and some job training skills. There are many things that can be improved in that program, and the legislature is seriously looking at that this session, one of which will help families who go back to work with a monthly stipend for up to a year once they're back in the workforce to help them transition off of welfare into the workforce more successfully. Many of the working poor families are eligible for food stamps, and actually a significant amount of food stamps. That's been one of the biggest groups that we've done outreach to, because oftentimes if a person is working full-time, they think, oh, I'm not eligible for anything. And in fact, in terms of food stamps, that has made a huge difference for those families working at below poverty wages. Sometimes there is health benefits available. Those, many of them, were cut out over the last few years, so I'm not really clear whether there's much help for working poor families. I know many of the jobs they're at do not offer health care benefits, so that's another cost that they have to grapple with. Several years ago, we did make the child care tax credit refundable for Oregon, and so that, in fact, we're tied with New York as the two child care friendliest states because of the tax credit that we provide. That's helped, again, with many of the costs. And if I might just say very quickly, in terms of child care, the poverty level where it's set was based on a family spending a third of their income on food, a third of their income on housing, and a third of their income on everything else. It did not make any they expected one person to stay home and take care of the kids. There are no child care costs in that poverty level, so you can even be making above poverty level wages, but by the time you take child care into account, you're back below the poverty level. So those kinds of credits are very important for families.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really enjoy seeing things like this. I worry very much about children and their families that are struggling to care for them. And I think while it's true that a child might cry when they're hungry, if the parent has no food to give to them, the child either is going to be put to bed crying, or the child is going to be put to bed, the parent is going to be hungry and crying because they don't have the food to give to their kids. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Berger.
Just briefly, Mr. Harper, I'm interested in your organization. I've always felt that the poor, or the working poor, are sort of doubly stressed by the fact that they're working, you know, moving the wheels and not getting any very well, but they also often suffer from a lack of sort of the ability, sort of financial skills to manage things, and your organization clearly speaks to that, sort of this financial literacy issue, and that there are things when you're working so hard you could do to kind of work your way out, get traction with what you're earning. And my question for you is, you are based in the Portland area. Is there a comparable organization in the Salem area that you know of that offers this kind of, you know, tax help? And I really like this model, this notion.
Chair Barnhart and Representative Berger, that's a very good question. There are three or four coalitions similar to ours located in the state of Oregon. There's one in Eugene. There's one in Madras. And there's a couple others, and we talk to each other. We're looking longer term at how do we consolidate our efforts so that when we print 40,000 brochures or flyers to go out to help for mailers, that we can print it for the whole state, and it's not just for three counties. And so the effort is to do exactly that. And getting back to the other question, is we're looking at when someone comes in and they get a $9,000 refund, and that's with the earned income tax credit, that's with the child tax credit, that's with the dependent care credit. And how can we help them become a banked person? How can we help them reduce their credit? How can we work with them using that toward education or whatever? So that's our major thrust is to help them get hold of this resource, and then the ability to use that to bootstrap themselves up in other areas.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
if I applaud this effort, and I, with your permission, will sort of encourage my local folks to sort of, you know, get on board and see if there's energy behind this, because I think this kind of thing makes a huge difference, and people need to know what they can do to help themselves.
Well, we partner with AARP, and so AARP targets the seniors, we target the low-income working families, but we include everybody, so we don't turn people away when they come in to get the help that they need. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. We really appreciate your testimony and the work that you're doing. How about Noreen? Is it Goplin? And Bina Patel? And we have one more panel after that. Thank you. Go ahead.
Greetings, Chairman Barnhart and committee. My name is Noreen Goplin, and I am the director of Lutheran Advocacy Ministry of Oregon and the lead convener of the Oregon Faith Roundtable Against Hunger. We are in support of the bills and the effort to reach 12% and the permanence of this in the Oregon tax code. I'm not going to repeat some of the things that other people have already stated. One thing I do want to share with you is that states throughout this country in this legislative session are moving to adopt EITCs, and most of them are including the refundability. The percentages that they're looking at are scattered, and so we don't know where the crux of that is going to end up as they finish their sessions. But it is, again, a point that this is a method, a strong tool in addressing poverty across the country that receives broad bipartisan support. And we're very thankful for that. Both Lutheran Advocacy Ministry of Oregon and the Oregon Faith Roundtable Against Hunger have reviewed the Oregon tax code and have become somewhat familiar with the impact in many areas of the strata, but particularly our concern about the tax burden on very low-income Oregonians. And so after we did this, I went out to try to find some people who are experiencing this. And recently, I spoke with two families who had prepared their 2006 tax returns. One looked forward to a check of $1,794. The dad plans on putting that into repairs in an older family vehicle to keep on the road, to keep on his job. The second family had high health expenses this past year, and so they are receiving $2,600. They plan on making a payment to their health care provider of $2,300. Their experiences are typical of people who receive significant checks. For many, this is one time to catch up or to invest those checks to keep their financial house in order. In preparing for this hearing, in addition to Mr. Harper of Cash, I also contacted AARP, and in particular their statewide coordinator for their tax aid program. We're in the last tax week of the year, and so they were unable to have somebody here at the hearing. I really recommend that you talk with them, as well as additional conversations with Cash and Mr. Harper. Their coordinator wanted to share some information with you. One is that the EITC is not available to people over the age of 65 unless there are children in the household. AARP has been assisting many families where the grandparents now have responsibility for their grandchildren. The funds available through the EITC are stabilizing their financial resources as they are now supporting another generation. And their coordinator saw this as a growing development in Oregon. And I think that all of us who are involved in direct service to people in poverty are recognizing the fact that many grandparents, I have four friends who are in this very similar circumstance. Another point that was discussed were the number of elders who are continuing to work because their Social Security or other resources are not enough to meet today's cost of living. And I love this one. I met this woman who is 85 and seeking a job. She retired at 65 and put her assets into a 20-year annuity. And guess what? She's 85. She actually, for a period of time, got a job at 10 hours a week helping in support services in a local agency in the metro area. And while she may be atypical, her circumstances are repeated by many people, and they may be among people you're familiar with, who have not been able to save enough for retirement and now need to continue to work and do that in a rapidly growing and expensive economy. While the current bills do not cover this, it is your work ahead. So I thought I'd let you know you have work to do. As the committee considers the financial impact on the state, as well as the impact on Oregonians needing this help, it's important to note that at the federal level, between 15% and 25% of the households who are qualified for the EITC have not applied for it. Those two figures come, one from the General Accounting Office and the other from the IRS. This is not surprising in that low-income Oregonians often are not aware of programs that can help them, such as cash and AARP. And we think that the slow entry of users may be something that you should consider as you take a look at what the financial impact on the state will be. I want to reiterate what we've heard so far, and that is the EITC and food stamps are the two most useful tools in combating poverty in Oregon. I also want to, Representative Butler is still in the room, and I do want to say that it is our appreciation for the work that you and Senator Deckert did in the closing negotiations of the budget in the last session. And we really appreciate that collaborative, bipartisan approach to resolving a problem for many Oregonians. And I hope that the committee follows that lead in resolving this issue for the future. Thank you.
Good afternoon. It's nice to be here. For the record, my name is Bina Patel. I'm director of the Oregon Asset Policy Initiative at the Cascade Policy Institute. I thank the chair and the members of this committee for taking my testimony today. You've heard of most of what I've said today, so I just wanted to touch on a couple of other points. First, the Oregon Asset Policy Initiative is a new initiative of Cascade Policy Institute, a nonprofit think tank working on economic opportunity, personal liberty, and personal responsibility based out of Portland. The Oregon Asset Policy Initiative looks at different approaches to protect and increase assets among low-income working families in Oregon. So we look at all different kinds of public assistance programs and asset-building opportunities for these families, which is what brings me here today. The EITC is one of the most powerful tools we have, so I'm speaking in support of both of these bills, and I'm very glad to see them come forward. You have my written testimony, so what I'd actually like to do is speak to my personal experience in working with families across the state of Oregon on financial literacy. So for the past several years, I've provided one-on-one financial education with low-income working families. And the hardest time was right before tax season, when all of their forms were coming in. So right around December, when there was a lot of expenses, and then they were getting all these forms in from their employers, and we thought, what's going to happen? And there was a lot of stress among these families being at the year end, with the holidays and so on. The best part of my work was when we were able to apply for the EITC and bring income back into the family. So in addition to helping these families catch up, as we've heard, paying off debt, health care needs, et cetera, one of the best parts also that's been missing in part of our conversation so far is the asset building opportunity that bringing in thousands of dollars to these families offers. So in response to your question, actually, Representative Gelser, one of the other ways, in addition to providing public assistance and access to a number of income transfers and so on, are programs like the individual asset accounts, IDAs, of which there is a bill going through. I believe it's House Bill 2094/5. So if you see that come along, please support it. So the EITC not only helps families get ahead in terms of meeting their debt and their other obligations, But as providers, we have an obligation and an opportunity, in fact, to help leverage those dollars that are coming in through the EITC. So we see a number of families not only reduce poverty and kind of get stabilized, but we see poverty reduced in the long term through generations. So to your question, when they're working, we can see that by leveraging assets, in addition to paying off debt, we have profound and long-term impacts on children generation after generation. So beyond what we've heard, I'd like you to also consider that the EITC is used for many, many reasons, in addition to paying off debt and using it for health care needs and so on. And the last piece I really wanted to touch on is the importance of earned income, and that I applaud the committee for bringing earned income back into the family. Income shows up in different forms for families, as we know. Sometimes it's public assistance. Income can be transfers from friends and family for the short terms. It can unfortunately also be in the form of very high interest loans for some of these families. Bringing earned income back to the family shows families that what they do every day matters, and that it's important that they manage it well and that they keep it within their family to meet their needs and build on their assets. So that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel?
No, just...
Yes, please.
Just repeat my comment. This notion of financial literacy, using the tools that are there and people that help them, I really applaud that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yes. And it's wonderful. We have several different organizations coming at it from slightly different angles that I think probably makes the ecology of these sorts of things work better anyway.
Well, and I just think it speaks to the fact that there's this financial literacy issue. You can give people money, but if you give them the tools to use money wisely, you really are helping a lot.
That's true. Thank you very much. John Mullen and Wendy, you know who you are. Yes, Van Elver something. Van Elver. Thank you. Come forward, please. In my defense, there are a couple of extra letters in your name.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. I have some written testimony, but I'm going to only just briefly refer to it because I believe you've heard some excellent testimony here today, and there's really, I don't think, much need to go over statistics and information about the earned income credit. But I do want to, after hearing some of the discussion, do want to reflect a little bit for the committee on my previous role before coming to the Oregon Law Center. I retired last year after 26 years of running Clackamas County Social Services, where we provided services and opportunities for elderly, people with disabilities, and low-income individuals and families. And what we would try to do regularly is to make sense out of the about 65 or so different funding sources that we had to focus on the needs in our local community. And one of the things that we did was to spend time doing outreach to the community about benefits that they could avail themselves of, and particularly talking about things like the Earned Income Tax Credit and the Oregon Earned Income Credit as ways in which work could be made to pay for people. And we encourage people to participate in those programs. We also, as you review Mr. Harper's testimony from CASH, you'll see that Clackamas County Social Services was a partner working with CASH, continue to do that. So I think that the discussion here today, again, has been very helpful, and I reflect back on Representative Rosenbaum's comments early on in the committee discussion about saying that the Earned Income Tax Credit has done more to lift children in poverty out of poverty, and coupled with what we can do with the Earned Income Credit in Oregon, I think we can really make strides to alleviating some of the causes and conditions of poverty. And thank you very much. I would like to add a little tag, if I might. Ellen Lowe, who is known to many of you, could not be here today, and she was one of the very early champions of the Earned Income Credit, and she wanted to be sure that I mentioned that her support for this work and for the discussion here today and for the bills, and also on behalf of the Oregon Food Bank, one of the groups she represents. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart and committee members. My name is Wendy Van Elverdine. I'm the Executive Director for Community Action Directors of Oregon, and John used to be on my board until he retired from that job. As he said, he was a community action agency, but he was based in county government. Some community action agencies are part of county government. Some are nonprofit organizations, but we do cover the entire state of Oregon. We are also part of a national network with more than 1,000 community action agencies across the country. So there are models for what we're talking about here today to look at, and I'm specifically speaking about what Representative Berger asked about. And I'm not going to read my written testimony, but I will talk about one specific program, and that is the one that Neighbor Impact in Central Oregon is involved with the Madras Group. And that is looking at not only your income tax credit, but looking at the IDA programs and financial literacy. The beauty of the IDAs, the individual development accounts, is that people put money into that and can oftentimes get matching funds, oftentimes 2 to 3 times the amount they put in. And what the earned income tax credit does is gives them a chunk of money they can put in and get those matching funds. IDAs need to be used for very specific things, either to get their GED or a skills development education, perhaps a university degree, or they have to start a business, or they can buy their first home. All things that help stabilize a family and move them out of poverty. So the EITC is an excellent tool to help move those families to a point where they can start building assets to create a better future for themselves and their children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Thank you. We appreciate very much your work and your testimony today.
Thanks.
Are there others who would like to be heard on House Bill 2398 or House Bill 2023 today? Committee, we've had quite a stir going on up here while the testimony has been going on, and I'm hoping that we're going to be able to get a work group out of this discussion to propose, probably not in the form of these two bills because the relating clause, but with the subject matter at hand, at least in connection with some other bills. And I think Representative Butler is willing to work on that. Representative Rosenbaum, are you willing to work on that as well?
Yes, definitely.
Are there others who would like to be involved in that discussion? Representative Reed? Thank you. So you have your marching orders. So go and do good and help us and come back with something that we actually can use and that won't break the bank, because my biggest concern about these bills is not the concept, it's the cost. And when I meet with Representative Nolan, the first thing she always says is, don't spend any money, we haven't got any. Thank you. Is there anything else for today?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to work with Representative Rosenbaum and Representative Reed. I'll try and get a time together, but I would like to address the kinds of things that I just asked Patty Whitney Wise relative to how do we get all of these things accomplished and still not have it have a fiscal impact, something that will require 31 votes and still be able to meet the obligations and as well address the senior poor as well that are among us. So with that, Mr. Chair, thank you very much, and we will try to start meeting, I hope, to maybe by Thursday at 7:30 in the morning. I know Representative Reed would like to start at 6, but I'm already thrilled for that time.
You're already busy at 6 o'clock.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you. And if there's nothing else on that issue today, we'll close the public hearing, and the committee is adjourned.